Big grain from him. Now it's long, 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 so long ago. There's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time. When it's over, so they say, it'll rain.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning, America. Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, cities around our state, around our community. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis here at the station WAUK, the Shaw, Waukesha. It is 5:40 a.m., 101 FM, and we're going to be taking your calls throughout the next 2 hours. That number is 844-967-2789. I am once again delighted to be with you this morning. This is our fourth show. The first month of our program, looking forward to many more weeks in the future. This morning, an especially important discussion with you, with all of our community, about major Supreme Court cases of just this past week. We're going to start that in just a moment or so, but consistent with our tradition, let me begin by talking about history today. It was in 1876, Saturday, June 25th, 1876, that our Sioux and Cheyenne Native American tribes defeated George Armstrong Custer at the Battle of Little Bighorn, 1876, June 25th. 1943, Dwight Eisenhower becomes the Supreme Allied Commander in World War II. 1950, today in 1950, North Korea attacks South Korea at the start of the Korean conflict, a conflict that, as you know, lasted until 1953. 1951, CBS became the first network to broadcast in color. 1967, the year that the Beatles released All You Need Is Love. The first time was performed in a show called Our World. 1993 was the time that Canada elected its first woman a prime minister. And after that, in 2011, New York became the first, the sixth state in the union to legalize same-sex marriage in 2011, an issue we're going to be chatting about a little bit later on today as well. So many important dates in the history of America. Today is the 176th day of 2022. And again, we're going to be taking your calls throughout this hour and next hour. That number is 844-967-2789. During the time of our first three programs, the first three sessions of Morning Cannolis, we have been chatting and focusing an awful lot about the United States Supreme Court, the decisions that it has rendered, the decisions that it will be rendering. And today, a lot of that discussion comes to fruition as we discuss at least two and perhaps more cases that were in fact decided just this past week. One of them about 24 hours ago, another about about 48 hours ago. We're going to talk about all of that as we get going here this morning. Again, inviting your comments, your questions, your observations about America and the things that are going on in our nation. Let's jump right into our discussion this morning. Yes, I know that all media stations this morning, last night, yesterday afternoon, discussing the all-important decision in Dobbs. This is the case that overrules Roe versus Wade. And we should continue that discussion this morning because it does follow on the commentary, your questions, your comments from the past several weeks when we examined what the Supreme Court would likely do based not just upon the released, inappropriately released opinion from Justice Alito of a number of weeks ago, but also upon the oral argument that was conducted by the Supreme Court way back in December. So we've known for many, many months that this was coming. Still, even so, to see the Supreme Court yesterday at just about this hour release an opinion that dramatically changes the landscape of how we live for women, certainly in America, and I would say for all of us in America, because its implications are plainly beyond just abortion, as significant as that is. Let's begin by talking fundamentally. Let's lay some groundwork here for what it was that the Supreme Court did and did not say yesterday. It is a sweeping opinion. There are 200 pages of material for Americans to digest. I'm going to try to attempt here a bit of a summary of that, and then we'll go back and forth and try to delve a little bit more deeply into some specific aspects of the majority opinion, a couple of the concurrences, and also a very significant dissent from, needless to say, three members of the Supreme Court, predictably objecting to this major decision by the United States Supreme Court. And so we begin with Justice Samuel Alito. He is writing for majority of the Supreme Court. That's six members. We'll talk about how that falls out in just a moment or so. And he says that the 1973 opinion in Roe versus Wade, written at that time by Justice Harry Blackmun, January 22nd, 1973, that ruling and subsequent high court decisions, including a case called Casey in 1992, we'll chat about that as well, an opinion written principally by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and other members of the Supreme Court, that those cases, as Justice Alito, writing for majority, said, must be overruled. Why? He goes on to say that they were egregiously wrong and that the arguments were exceptionally weak, those his words, and so damaging that they amounted to an abuse of judicial authority. That is what the United States Supreme Court has announced yesterday in turning back in unequivocal language. It is difficult to imagine stronger language refuting, turning back what is just about 50 years of history, civil rights history, human rights history, rights of women and others throughout our nation, turned back yesterday morning at just about this hour by this decision in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization coming out of Mississippi. The narrow question before the Supreme Court, of course, is whether or not the 15-week ban established by the Mississippi's Gestational Age Act is in fact constitutional, and the Supreme Court upholds that law, obviously, along the way, necessarily overturning Roe versus Wade, which would have been and remains inconsistent with that Mississippi law. And so the decision, which again, as all of us know, was leaked in early May, means that abortion rights will be rolled back in probably about half the states of our union almost immediately. We'll chat about some of the numbers there as well, with more restrictions likely to come in many, many states. Wisconsin is also dramatically impacted by what happened yesterday in our high court. For all practical purposes, most people looking at this opinion say that abortion will not be available in large swaths of the country. The decision almost certainly also means that the high court itself, as well as the lower appeals courts, the district courts, are now going to become focuses of additional litigation, challenging in both sides, from both sides, in all directions, the meaning, the import of what it was that Justice Alito, writing for the majority of the Supreme Court, said yesterday again, turning back 49 and a half years, almost 50 years of precedent when it comes to abortion rights. I will say to you also largely,
privacy rights, which is also the broader implication, which we chatted about at great length in our second program a couple of weeks ago. We know that the Alito opinion yesterday was joined by Justice Clarence Thomas, again, who also wrote a concurrence. We definitely need to talk about that this morning. You recall that Justice Thomas, appointed by the first President Bush, and then also joined in by the three Trump appointees, and they are Justices Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. So that makes up the core of the majority opinion. And then we also have the Chief Justice, who during the course of the oral argument way back in December, plainly, unmistakably trying to find a middle ground for all of this, trying to find perhaps one member of the more conservative side of the court, so-called, that might join him in a middle view that basically would say that the Mississippi law 15 weeks is okay, but we're not overruling Roe versus Wade. And he talks about that in his own concurrence. He does join the majority. He does make this a 6-3 vote, but he gets there on a different basis. And so that's a significant observation in our jurisprudence today. And along the way, the Chief Justice says that while he's concurring in the judgment, the decision only with respect to the Mississippi case, he would have limited that decision to upholding only that. And as I said, not expanding this more broadly. The Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court calls the majority opinion. He calls the majority opinion a serious jolt to the legal system. He said that both majority and the dissent, which we'll also talk about this morning, displayed, as he described it, a relentless freedom from doubt on the legal issues that I cannot share. That's the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court trying once again desperately, unsuccessfully, to find a middle ground, joining the majority to overturn Roe versus Wade, supporting the Mississippi law, but nonetheless carving out his own ground for it. And then also, just to lay the groundwork this morning in our first portion of the show this morning, we have, predictably, the three justices, Justice Stephen Breyer, Justice Elena Kagan, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, all of them dissenting vigorously. Lengthy, very, very detailed dissents, vigorously opposing, objecting to this decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. They indicate, along many other lines that are a part of their opinion, that this decision today, this is quoting from the dissent, that young women today will come of age with fewer rights than their mothers and grandmothers. That's a line that was also repeated, invoked by the vice president just yesterday as well, reacting to the opinion in America. They went on to say, this is the dissent, the disagreeing justices. The court's opinion means that from the very moment of fertilization, a woman has no right to speak of. That's what the the dissenting justices say. A state, they go on to say, can force her to bring a pregnancy to term even at the steepest personal and familial costs. And so they go on to say, with sorrow for this court, but more for the millions of American women who have today lost a fundamental constitutional protection, we dissent. Those are the broad categories of the case itself. Of the opinions issued by the various justices of the Supreme Court. And Justice Alito, again, this 78-page opinion has a 38-page appendix, leaving very little authority for the proposition that some inherent right to privacy or personal autonomy in various provisions of the Constitution. We're going to talk more about that, delve more deeply into it right after the break, encouraging also your comments and questions at 844-967-2789. Talking this morning about Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization in our first hour this morning, WAUK Radio, The Shaw, 101 FM, 540 AM.
Say what you had me thinking.
And we're back. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. This is Jim Santel. This is our weekend review of the important stories in law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. A special program this morning. This is our very special discussion of two major Supreme Court cases this past week. We're starting out in our first hour talking about Dobbs, the case that overrules Roe versus Wade. And then we're going to move in our second hour to the case called Bruin coming out of New York, also the United States Supreme Court, a major case under the Second Amendment having to do with guns and the right to carry guns in public in America. That case coming out on Thursday. Dobbs issued just yesterday, about 24, maybe 25 hours ago, right now. And so right before the break, we were setting the groundwork for our understanding of the Supreme Court case, this opinion written by Justice Alito, in which five of his fellow justices concurred, including the Chief Justice, although on different grounds. And then we're also going to chat about this dissent, which articulates and codifies what many Americans, I suspect, are also feeling this morning. Before we get to some callers, we encourage your calls at 844-967-2789. Just a bit more about the significance of what Justice Alito wrote just yesterday, released to the American population, being digested this morning and throughout this weekend, the days ahead, as we look forward to even more litigation about what this means. Writing from the majority, Justice Alito also says, "We hold that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion." He has a very literalist, textual view of this and says that the word abortion does not appear in the Constitution. Of course, it does not, as do many other rights and other privileges that the Supreme Court has traditionally recognized. He goes on to say as to what standards the court should apply in the event that a state regulation of abortion is in fact challenged. Alito said that any state regulation of abortion is presumptively valid. Any state regulation presumptively valid, and as he said, these are his words, must be sustained if there is a rational basis on which the legislature could have thought it was serving legitimate state interests. And those can include respect for and preservation of prenatal life at all stages of development. All stages of development. He goes on to say that states are entitled to regulate abortion to eliminate what he described as gruesome and barbaric medical procedures, to preserve the integrity of the medical profession, and to prevent discrimination on the basis of race, sex, or disability, including barring abortion in cases of fetal abnormality. A very sweeping opinion. It is difficult to imagine a more sweeping brushing away of Roe versus Wade, 49 and a half years, 50, almost 50 years of tradition in America, and an affirmation that the previous cases, including Casey, were simply wrongly decided, and a great analysis indicating from his view and the view of most of his concurring justice colleagues that that opinion was simply wrong. Wrongly decided, wrongly based upon tradition, wrongly based upon interpretation of the Constitution. So needless to say, lots to talk about this morning. We are encouraging your comments and questions. We're going to begin this morning with Dick. Dick, we thank you for calling in. Your thoughts or questions this morning about this major change in America, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Glad to have you on the air with us, Dick.
Well, after this week, I can see why the polling is at 25% for the Supreme Court. That said, I think it's become the biggest albatross around the neck of the three branches of government. And I'd sum up the whole court right now in saying that the Supreme Court bringing minority-supported laws to the majority of the country.
And Dick, I think your observation is so well taken. We know even before this opinion was issued, for many, many years, there has been a majority of Americans who embrace and understand and appreciate the right to abortion in America. And it's not simply because of the tradition. There's an awful lot of discussion in the Supreme Court case about precedent, a thing called stare decisis, and the reason why we do not overturn lightly things unless they really do establish a previously established a no notion, a fundamental understanding that we acknowledge is wrong. Your comment, Dick, about America's understanding of its right, its reliance upon this right, I think is completely well taken. And it is significant, that in the majority opinion, there is very little, if any deference, there's a tipping of the hat to it, but very little deference to this notion that America has relied upon this. Women have relied on this. Families have relied on this for almost 50 years. Justice Alito and the others seem to be able to dismiss that with the great ease, candidly. It is a dramatic opinion. As you indicate, it also prompts people to wonder about the motives, if you will, the partisan nature of the Supreme Court and other things that they bring to this all-important analysis. With respect to the second case we're going to talk about this morning in the second hour, which is Bruin coming out of New York, and this opinion likewise expanding a case called Heller to provide a constitutional right for the first time in American history for all Americans to carry weapons in public, as specifically as to New York, but it has broad implications under the Second Amendment. That too, a case that is probably inconsistent with much of America. This, once again, is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis, talking about Roe versus Wade, talking about Casey versus Planned Parenthood, and the fact that those two cases were overruled by the United States Supreme Court this past week in this case out of Mississippi called Dobbs. Right before the break, we were chatting about Justice Thomas's concurrence, which is also getting major headlines because of the starkness and the dramatic nature of what he said, agreeing with the majority, but nonetheless writing separately to say this: that the court should reconsider a number of decisions that go fundamentally to other rights beyond just the abortion right. Significantly, just by way of introduction, in the majority opinion, Justice Alito sought to allay fears about the wide-ranging nature of the opinion, the very breadth of the language that he was articulating. And he said this. He said, to ensure that our decision is not misunderstood or mischaracterized, we emphasize that our decision concerns the constitutional right to abortion and no other right. Nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion. In his concurring opinion, Justice Thomas plainly disagrees with that, or at least in the world that he would have us be. He says that the court should, in fact, undertake a review of other privacy rights premised cases. He talks about Griswold versus Connecticut. We chatted about this on our second show a couple of weekends ago, 1965 decision that declared that married couples have a right to contraception. Clarence Thomas would have us review a case called Lawrence versus Texas, a 2003 case. We also chatted about this, a case that invalidated sodomy laws, making sodomy a crime and making same-sex sexual activity legal across America. Justice Thomas would have us revisit that case. And the third one is Obergefell versus Hodges, the 2015 case establishing the right of gay couples to marry. Those are the three cases that Justice Thomas would have the Supreme Court take up next under this notion that, well, if there's no longer a privacy right to abortion, these should also fall. And isn't that precisely what many people have predicted? We chatted about this very issue, the cascading impact of a decision of the sort that we got just yesterday in Dobbs. And again, the Supreme Court, in its majority opinion, according to Justice Alito, is not going down that road. But the dissent by three other justices plainly says, we'll wait to see. And unlikely that there will be no litigation in those other areas. Undeniably, this opens up those issues, those avenues for attacking those equally fundamental rights, and all goes to privacy rights. We talked previously about Griswold versus Connecticut, this landmark case in which the Supreme Court said, yes, coming out of the Constitution, even though the word contraceptive is not there, the word privacy is not there, you have these penumbras of rights, and various other justices talking about the 14th Amendment, the 9th Amendment, all of them sort of emanating, suggesting you've got rights beyond the narrow language of the Constitution.
That notion pretty much rejected by the Supreme Court this past week. Justice Alito articulating a fairly textual basis for his decision, finding that the word abortion does not appear, and therefore it is not a part of our tradition, not a part of our history, not a part of our jurisprudence in America. Justice Thomas wanting to go even beyond that, even while concurring with the majority in its result, to uphold the contrary to Roe versus Wade legislation out of Louisiana, 15-week abortion ban, plainly encouraging other states down the road to do the same and opening things up. Let's talk about a couple of other concurrences there. Not a lot of attention to this one. This is Justice Kavanaugh saying, as he did during the course of the oral argument, that he feels the Constitution is neutral, neither pro-life nor pro-choice. The Constitution is neutral, he says, and this court likewise must be scrupulously neutral. The court today properly heeds the constitutional principle of judicial neutrality and returns the issue of abortion to the people and their elected representatives in the democratic process. And so, consistent with what Justice Alito was saying, Justice Kavanaugh likewise embracing that, but taking a slightly different linguistic approach, I would offer, saying that, well, we're not simply withdrawing our support, we're becoming neutral. And again, I think that that is perhaps just linguistic gymnastics. And let's revisit once again Justice Roberts, who again, plainly pained by all of this, trying as the Roberts Court, as he lends his name to this court, trying to find some middle ground upon which Roe versus Wade could be maintained while also supporting the legislation coming out of Mississippi. He says that, "I am not sure that a ban on terminating a pregnancy from the moment of conception must be treated the same under the Constitution as a ban after 15 weeks." That's coming from the Chief Justice. That's significant language. A thoughtful member of the court once counseled that the difficulty of a question admonishes us to observe the wise limitations on our function and to confine ourselves to deciding only what is necessary with the disposition of the immediate case. He finally goes on to say, "I would decide the question we granted review to answer whether the previously recognized abortion right bars all abortion restrictions prior to viability, such that a ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy is necessarily unlawful. The answer to that question, Chief Justice Roberts says, is no. And there is no need to go further to decide this case," taking a shot at the majority of the Supreme Court in his concurrence, nonetheless lending his vote among the six to overrule Roe versus Wade. We have another call on the line. This is Susan. Susan calling in. We appreciate very much your time with us this morning, Susan. Your comment, your question.
Good morning, Jim. I have a question and comment combined. I am interested in the fact that the Supreme Court now has a 25% approval rating, and probably my guess is it's going to go down. But given that the Supreme Court issues these edicts regardless of what apparently the public opinion is, so what happens if people say, "Hey, I'm not going to, you don't have any way of enforcing this. How are you going to make me do it?"
Susan, we'll hold for your other comment, which I appreciate as well. Let me comment about that. I think this is the larger issue, right? That I don't mean to undermine or in any way minimize the huge significance of this case. And it's the things that may follow if other justices, including Justice Thomas, follow on their own plans to again, dropkick privacy rights in many other areas. This is huge. The other point that you're making, Susan, I would offer is equally important. When a great majority of Americans, as you just indicated, simply do not support this, again, the Supreme Court should not be responding every day in and out to polls. But nonetheless, Supreme Court should be reflecting the life and livelihood of America in the 21st century. And when it doesn't do that, and when it is so out of sorts, as you just indicated, Susan, with what Americans think, the great concern is that we begin to say, you know what?
I simply don't have to follow that. Those are people whose opinions are illegitimate. They do not reflect not only mine, but they don't reflect the opinions of a great majority of Americans, on which there can, in fact, be legitimate legal basis, right? We're not simply saying that there are unfounded other views out there. They've been legitimate for 49 and a half, almost 50 years. The concern is the impact down the road that this has on people looking at government and saying it's legitimate and perhaps saying it is not legitimate and moving in different directions. That's when a democracy, a republic like ours, begins to dissolve. That's the other great concern. And that's why your comment, Susan, is so very important. You had another observation to make as well. Go ahead and make that as well, Susan.
Well, it seems to me that this just goes to the fact that the people who are behind us have been working on this for like 40 years. And they weren't particularly, to start with, very interested in the issue, but they figured out that there was a large number of votes that was available if they decided to latch onto them. And that's the evangelical fanatics. They have managed to put everybody together with white nationalists, with toxic masculinity issues, that none of these people seem to have anything in common and probably wouldn't give and you don't care one way or another about the abortion issue. But what I'm saying is that we need to look at this in terms of where do we go from here, because they're ready for us and we're not ready for them.
Susan, your point again, so well taken. Undeniably, this is the result of a years long plan, a playbook, if you will, beginning with a lot of failures early on in early years of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. The Supreme Court and other lower courts adopting and embracing the decision in Roe versus Wade and Casey and saying, you know what, attempts even to limit access to abortion, those we turn back. All along the way, a periodic and clear, if not always successful, movement forward to this day, a playbook that we saw come to complete fruition yesterday. Your invocation, your encouragement to all of us to have a playbook to begin to move in that opposite direction. Your question about what do we do next, that's going to be the subject of our next discussion as well. That's the invocation that all Americans need to think about. A playbook for the future, knowing that this is the law right now. What happens next? We're going to talk about more of that right after the break. And Susan, thank you so much for your comments, your observations. We'll chat more about this right after the break at 847-2789. This is the Shaw WAUK Radio in Waukesha, Wisconsin. We're back. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. The last segment of this hour, but continuing next hour as well. We're chatting in this hour about the impact, the meaning, the substance, and the long-range predictions about what happens in the wake of the Supreme Court decision just yesterday in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. But before the break, we were taking some calls about that future and also about what the dissenters had to say about the majority opinion. Those dissenters, of course, Justice Breyer, who will be retiring soon, leaving the bench right after the conclusion of this term, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Elena Kagan. As much as I commend the reading of the majority opinion to every one of us in America who is concerned about these privacy issues, including abortion, and I would offer that that is every single American of adult age and even those in a lower than adult age, the dissenting opinion, likewise, is a must-read. It is a must-read. Also, very lengthy, taking on virtually all those things we've chatted about this morning, identifying the problems from their perspective with what Justice Alito and others have said, including the concurrences from Justice Kavanaugh and certainly from Justice Thomas as well, suggesting that we should revisit all kinds of privacy rights in the future. Along the way, you've got writing for his colleagues, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan. We have Justice Breyer saying,
saying about the majority opinion, saying that the majority says that from the very moment of fertilization, a woman has no right to speak of. This is from his opinion. A state can force her to bring a pregnancy to term, even at the steepest personal and familial costs. An abortion restriction, the majority holds, is permissible whenever rational, the lowest level of scrutiny known to the law. And that's exactly what Justice Alito said in his majority opinion. And because, as the court has often stated, protecting fetal life is rational, states will now feel free to enact all manner of restrictions. The language goes on at great length. Above all others, Justice Breyer says, women lacking financial resources will suffer from today's decision. In any event, interstate restrictions will also soon be in the offing. After this decision, some states may block women from traveling out of state to obtain abortions or even from receiving abortion medications from out of state. Some may criminalize efforts, including the provisions of information or funding to help women gain access to other states' abortion services. Most threatening of all, Justice Breyer goes on to say, no language in today's decision stops the federal government from prohibiting abortions nationwide. Once again, from the moment of conception and without exceptions for rape or incest. Hugely important language, hugely compelling, chilling, I would offer, in terms of his predictions about what this means down the road. We have another caller right now. We thank you so much. Kristen, thank you for calling in this morning. Your comment, your observation, your suggestion about the future of America in the wake of Dobbs.
Good morning, Jim. I think one of the major societal shifts that is going to make the fight for abortion rights different this time than it was last time is social media, the media, and the fact that women are not ashamed to talk about what's happening in their lives anymore, especially young women. So, you know, whereas in the past, in the 40s, the 50s, and before, you know, someone would get pregnant and then get shunted off to Auntie M's house, you know, for 9 months and then come back after, you know, and pretend nothing happened. That's not going to happen. This is going to be completely different. And when people die of botched abortions, the coroner isn't going to write, you know, heart attack or some lie on the death certificate. We're going to find out exactly what the carnage is going to be here. And I can only call on the media to not brush this aside, you know?
Absolutely. We're going to get those specific accounts, right, Kristen, of what is happening out there. What is the impact of what Justice Alito wrote, not just for lawyers like me and others who engage in these academic discussions? What is happening in Wisconsin? What's happening in Waukesha? What's happening in Missouri and Oregon and Florida and Texas and all throughout our nation? Those specific events, we're going to hear about them. I'm already hearing about them this morning as some of the clinics close, right? In those states that already have these trigger laws that basically say that if Roe versus Wade is overturned, we go back to the laws that we have had in place or the ones that we recently enacted that are quite literally prohibiting women this morning and yesterday after 10 o'clock Eastern time from getting access. Precisely the kind of thing that you're talking about, that accounting of the impact of this, which is also what Justice Breyer indicates is should be coming down the road. That's what you're talking about, right? That's the advocacy. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why the public needs to respond to this and let elected officials, to the extent that they can, in fact, here in Wisconsin, other places around the nation, respond knowing that their impact is not as important this is not simply overturning the language in a majority opinion, but affecting human life. Incredibly exactly. Important, incredibly important. And Kristen, you know, as we think about what's going on here, again, I've tried to do a little bit of my own analysis of the broad legislative impacts here. We know that there are at least nine states, my math may be a little bit faulty here, including Wisconsin, that have laws already in place, ours from 1849, prohibiting abortion. Other states, including Wisconsin, Utah, South Dakota, Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, Kentucky,
all of those states, including our own state right now, in place right now, those old laws, ours from 1849, back in place. Now, we have a governor. We've got an attorney general. We've got a district attorneys around the state who are saying, we're not going to enforce that. We're not going to enforce that. And we plainly, they're looking at legislative responses, if possible, in the state of Wisconsin and other places to address that. We also have other states out there where there probably will be changes fairly immediately. Idaho, Wyoming, North Dakota, Texas, Mississippi, again, plainly Mississippi, Tennessee, West Virginia, all of these cases. The governor of Oklahoma this morning, likewise, again, saying that based upon the legislation that state has passed, the most pro-life, anti-abortion state in the union, describing the specter that the justices in dissent specifically describe, that is that there will be no abortion from the time of conception in Oklahoma, and prompting people to move north, other places. So those accounts you talk about, Kristen, very, very important as we go forward and try to figure out what we do next in America in the wake of Dobbs.
Yep.
And Kristen, thank you so much for your call this morning. Appreciate Kristen's call, all the other callers this morning. We're taking those calls at 844-967-2789. We're here at the Shaw, WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM. We're finishing up here this hour with a very good discussion. Appreciate the phone calls, value them tremendously, about what happened yesterday, trying to get some baseline understanding of what the United States Supreme Court said, what it didn't say, the sweeping nature of the language coming out of the Supreme Court, and the equally commendable in terms of your academic understanding of it, your intellectual appreciation of what the Supreme Court has said, all of that coming out also from the dissent and the concurrences as well from Justice Kavanaugh. Again, this neutrality position that he advocates for, and the Chief Justice Roberts, who again, finding no place for a middle ground here. Again, the takeaway, I think, with respect to this morning is the draft opinion that we saw a number of weeks ago, horrific though that was pretty much the opinion that was in fact issued. Justice Alito is not giving any countenance, if you will, not a lot of wiggle room here. Yes, he's acknowledging that today we're deciding nothing more than abortion. We will see if that happens. But the stridency of his rejection, the stridency, the completeness, the unconditional nature of his rejection of everything that the Supreme Court has done up until now, including those opinions in Casey, including the opinion by Justice Blackmun and Roe versus Wade 50 years ago, going through them with great particularity and describing how unfounded they were at the time, how unbased they are to this day.